Hello, and welcome to the Lessons Unlocked podcast. I'm your host, Colleen McCracken. I've been looking for ways to increase music education accessibility, and I think this podcast can make a difference. The Lessons Unlocked podcast uses a virtual platform to engage with student musicians through masterclass-style instruction. Students may submit a recording of their playing for in-depth feedback to be shared with all listeners. I'm also adding a Q&A section to the podcast, so please submit any questions that come up for you. This week's name to know is Philippe Bernold, a prominent flutist, conductor, and music educator in France. Bernold attended the Paris Conservatoire, which is also known as the Conservatoire National Supérieur de Musique et de Danse, where he is now professor of chamber music and flute. A winner of the Jean-Pierre Rampal International Competition, he has enjoyed an outstanding career as a soloist, performing with the Paris Orchestra, Kyoto Symphony Orchestra, and many others. As a conductor, he founded Les Virtuoses de l'Opéra de Lyon, an ensemble with a reputation for a high level of artistry. His dedication to music education can be seen in his method book publications, Technique of the Embouchure, which aids flutists in developing their embouchure and beautiful tone, The Wind, the Sound, which focuses on gaining control of the air column, and Pronunciation, which addresses articulation. For more information on Monsieur Philippe Bernold, please go to philippebernold.com in the description below. You may have heard about the Paris Conservatoire, but maybe not heard about why it's significant. The flute really wasn't popularized until a man named Paul Taffanel came around and taught at the Paris Conservatoire. He made that institution the premier place for studying the French flute school of playing, which he developed. This is the dominant style of playing in the United States, thanks to the many French flutists who've toured here, taught here, or moved here over the years. It's characterized by a light, captivating, and full tone with beautiful vibrato. This style took off with the popularization of the Bame flute, with additions from Louis Lowe and Louis Daroux. We had an instrument full of new capabilities, and it was time to show it. And composers certainly knew how. You may have heard of Louis Moyse's book, Flute Music by French Composers, which includes many of the classics, such as the Chaminade Concertino, the Frey Fantasy, and the Gobert Nocturne. If you haven't had the chance to play any works from that book, I'd highly recommend purchasing the book or finding a free copy of some of those pieces on IMSLP. French flute solos from the late 19th into the early 20th century are some of the most popular flute works to this day. That time period is referred to as the Belle Époque, or the Beautiful Era in France. This is when we got works such as Claude Debussy's Syrinx, Gabriel Fauré's Fantasy, and more by Camille Saint-Saëns, Maurice Ravel, and other famous French composers. This was really a golden era for flute music in France. We owe a lot of our most popular pieces to the Paris Conservatoire because of the annual Concours. The Concours were an end-of-year competition/exam where flutists would compete for top awards at graduation. I don't think the Concours still exist at the Conservatoire Supérieur de Musique et de Danse today, but they were an important part of flute history in France and for American musicians. The professor of flute at the Paris Conservatoire would commission new works for students to sight read at the Concours. Taffanel wanted the flute repertoire to be larger, more dynamic, and more virtuosic. He commissioned the Duvernay Concertino, Ganz, Andante and Scherzo, Parolles, Ballade in G minor, one of my favorites, Enesco's Cantabile e Presto, and Taffanel even wrote his own Andante Pastorale e Scherzatino. I could go on for hours about the French flute school, but I'll save that for another episode. Let's move on to our piece of the week. The piece of the week is Le Carnaval des Animaux, or Carnival of the Animals, by Camille Saint-Saëns. Saint-Saëns lived from 1835 to 1921 and was a founder of the National Society of Music in France. Carnival of the Animals was first performed during Paris's Carnival season, before Lent, after the composer died. Saint-Saëns filled the score with humor, imagining an elephant doing a light-footed dance and a tortoise doing a pretty slow can-can. This work features several instruments, including the flute, as it represents a bird in a movement titled Volière. This movement is exceptionally difficult, and I applaud every flutist who learns it. Perhaps the most famous movement, however, is Le Cygne, or the Swan. This movement features the cello on one of my favorite melodies of all time. I used this piece as a tool for tone and expression development when I studied in France. My teacher assigned it to me as something to learn from memory and then transpose into several different keys. It was quite a challenge for me, but it certainly paid off. An excellent recording of Le Carnaval des Animaux, available on streaming services, is published by Claude Pieplus and features Monsieur Philippe Bernold on the flute. I'll add that in the description below so you can take a listen. This week's organization highlight goes to the National Flute Association. This organization is based in the United States, but engages flutists from across the world. They offer several competitions, masterclasses, commissions, an annual convention, several online events, a flute-focused magazine, a mentorship program, scholarships, and an online repertoire guide. I've had the pleasure of attending and participating in several of the NFA conventions and would highly recommend them to any flutist interested. This year's convention will take place in Atlanta, Georgia, from August 7th to 10th. I'll be in attendance, and I'll actually get to perform with the University of North Carolina Greensboro Flute Ensemble as the winners of the Mary H. Anderson Collegiate Flute Choir Prize. Go Spartans! A special offering on the NFA website that I'd like to highlight is the Young Member Resources page, which includes free access to documents on articulation, body awareness, careers in music, college auditions, fingering and trill charts, flute history, online music games, jazz improv, low flutes, memorization, performance anxiety, piccolo, practice techniques, repertoire, tone, tuning, and warming up. They have a lot for you to check out. I'll include the link to the page in the description. It's masterclass time. I'm extra excited for today's first performer because she's performing an excerpt from one of my favorite flute solo pieces, Ballade for Flute and Piano by Alfred Perelieu. This is one of the Paris Conservatoire Concours pieces that I mentioned earlier in the episode. These works are known for demonstrating lyrical beauty and technical proficiency. Erica, take it away. Excellent work, Erica. This sounds really lovely. Thank you so much for sending this in. I really love this piece, and it's been a pleasure to listen to you today. The first thing I want to suggest is adding more space before the accents in the opening. We have this bomb, ba-da-dum, ba-da-dum, bomb, 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 ba-dum, bomb. I really hear this piece as either an operatic or a musical theater style tenor solo. And I feel like it opens with this, you know, something's going wrong. We've got some sort of issue here and there's a harshness to it. And I think that adding more space between the da, ta, ta, ti, um, pom, I think adding more space is going to translate that harshness, which will contract the soft lyrical section that starts just after that at measure 11. Now, in measure 6, it was hard to hear every note of the descending run. I think we're losing some of the middle notes. And I don't think it's because you're not fingering them. I think they're just not coming across to the audience. So I find that picking a note to focus on can help with making sure everything is clear to the audience. For you, I would explore either the E natural, the G, or the B flat for those mental landing points. And see if you can play that for someone, all three variations. If someone can let you know which sounds the best, or if you record yourself and listen back, that's another way where you could figure out which note focus works best. Similarly, I think that your grace note run in measure 10 could be fuller. I like to use the no flute method. I learned that from Carol Winsentz, so all credit goes to her if this works. And I learned that for moments like this. Instead of blowing across the tone hole on the flute, move your flute over on your face so you are completely to the right of the lip plate. You should not be producing a tone for this exercise. Then blow and finger the run. You should hopefully be able to hear your air and its consistency. This is a way to kind of separate your face from your hands. Carol explained it to me as making your hands forget what the air is doing and vice versa. And for some reason, that really helped me out with this. So I would recommend trying that for this excerpt and the grace note runs on measure 10. Try that and then go back to playing the regular way, and hopefully you'll notice a difference in consistency and clarity of that run. In measure 12 on the sextuplet, I like to add a little bit of rubato, and I'll demonstrate what I'm thinking here. Now, people have disagreed with me on that use of rubato there before. So if you disagree, don't do it. Don't feel weird about disagreeing. Musical decisions are sometimes taking what someone offers, but also leaving what someone offers. So just remember, not everything I say is something everyone's going to love, and that is okay. In the following measure, which is measure 13 for those of us following along, I want more emphasis on the appoggiaturas, and I think that might be best if I play it for you. So what I'm going for is beat-um, bum beat-um, bum beat-da-dee-da-dum. And he kind of guides us to that idea with those very small decrescendos over each appoggiatura figure. Along those lines, in measure 17, I would move where you breathe so that we can continue to have this beam beat-um figure that I think Peril Yu likes because he repeats it. So I would breathe before the last note of measure 17. So we're going beat um bum beat um beam beat um ba da dum. Just pretend like I sang the right intervals there. I promise I did pass aural skills and everything, but today is a Wednesday. Not the day that you're listening, but the day that I'm recording. I really love what you did in measure 22 with the trill. You started slowly and got faster, which I think is a beautiful way to keep a trill interesting. So very good work on that. Also, a lovely taper in measure 28, moving up to that high F. That's very hard to sound beautiful. So if you find yourself being overly critical of that section or getting frustrated with that ascending line with a decrescendo, just know that you have a lovely taper, and stay strong, keep working on it. It's sounding really good though. Now, in the allegro section, I might add a little more juice to the lowest notes in measure 30 and 32, which could sound something like this. What I was trying to do there was crescendo into the lower register. I don't know if that will come across well on this microphone, but I think by doing that, we're almost foreshadowing what's coming up in the 16th notes. And we're also adding a little bit more texture. He has us kind of emphasizing the turnaround points in measure 38 and in measure 40. So I think foreshadowing that kind of emphasis on those turnaround points could be useful for a listener. Speaking of the 16th notes, really great work. They're super hard and they take a lot of time to get up to tempo. So remember to be patient with yourself. Getting it up to tempo is going to take a while, but you have an excellent foundation. So nice work. I mentioned that Pearl U has us bringing out the turnaround points in measures 38 and 40. I would also bring those out in measures 37 and 39. So in 37, for me, that's going to be the low E natural, B da 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 da, and a measure 39, B da 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 da. I think this works as an interesting addition because the contour of the measure changes from when he gives us the phrase markings. When he has the phrase markings in measures 38 and 40, it's at the highest note of the measure. And what I'm suggesting is to add those at the lowest note of the measure in measures 37 and 39. I love the dynamic contrast you added in measure 42. Really good work on making the second iteration of the idea quieter than the first. That's a great way to keep things interesting to the listener. Another thing I noticed was I think we could use faster vibrato on the high Fs in measure 46 and 48. I would think of this moment as being one of those big operatic moments from our tenor, if we're going along with how I view this piece. I want to say that you have done a really, really great job working on this piece. I absolutely adore it. So it's been a pleasure listening to you and a pleasure to be able to talk about it. Thank you so much. Our next performer is Grace from North Carolina. She will be playing Syrinx by Claude Debussy. There's an interesting story behind this piece. A god named Pan had a crush on a nymph named Syrinx. His feelings were not reciprocated, so as he pursued her, she ended up turning herself into water reeds to hide from him. Ironically, Pan stopped and cut the reeds to turn into a pan flute. When he realized what he'd done, this is the song he played. Now, this piece was dedicated to and premiered by Louis Fleury, a student of Paul Taffanel, who was from my favorite French city, Lyon. He performed it as incidental music for one of Gabriel Mauret's plays called Psyche or Psyche. Grace, take it away. Thank you. Beautiful job, Grace. Thank you so much for sending this piece in. This is actually one of the pieces that I brought up earlier in the episode as well. And you may be thinking, wow, she's really good at organizing her podcast. It is by pure happenstance that this happened. So thank you both so much for submitting these turn of the century French flute works. I really appreciate it. Grace, I want to start by saying, first of all, that this is an outstanding performance. You should be very proud of yourself. However, I think you can take a lot more time in this piece. You're showing the audience that you have a beautiful sound, excellent technique, and you can do what is written on the page very well. But I would add in showing them how musical you can be and how you as an individual tell this story. So to start, I take this whole thing slower. I think your tempo is maybe 10 to 15 beats per minute faster than I would recommend. I also think you could take some more time at the breath marks. Those moments of silence allow the listeners to absorb what you've just performed for them. And I think this piece requires a lot of absorbing. So I would add those pauses. Sometimes those pauses may just be for dramatic effect, but others are going to be so the audience can really digest. Particularly in measure four just feels a little bit rushed to me. I think at that breath mark in there, you can take some more time. And in measure two, I think you should hold that high B flat longer. And I think you should add a little bit more vibrato to it. It's your first statement of the work. It's the end of your first statement. So I would really take advantage of that because by that point in the piece, who's zoning out? Who's distracted? No one. So really take that time to show off, oh, she's got great vibrato. Wow, she can hold this note for a long time. Her pitch is excellent. Beautiful taper. Impressive. That's why I think that you should take some more time there and hold it out longer. And to finish up, I would recommend listening to a recording of Emmanuel Pahoud. He's got a great recording of this that was taken in Berlin, and I will link that in the description below. I think his interpretation could provide some really good musical inspiration for you. He takes risks with being too slow and taking too much time, which I think would be good for you to experiment with. His interpretation makes the piece about a minute and a half longer than your interpretation. I'm not saying that the piece should necessarily take that long, but maybe you could find a happy medium between the two. Definitely take a listen. Really, really excellent work, Grace. Thank you so much for sending this piece in. I hope this feedback was helpful to you. You are clearly playing at a very high level, so congratulations. Our final section of the podcast today is going to be the Q&A. We've got 5 really great questions, so thank you all for submitting. The first question is, what tips do you have for breath control? Try walking around while practicing or doing jumping jacks and then running a piece. If you train yourself to do something that's more difficult than just playing the flute, when you do pick up and play the flute without doing those things beforehand, playing will become a lot easier. The second question is, what's the most memorable performance you've had? That would be performing Scheherazade with the St. Louis Symphony Youth Orchestra when I was a junior in high school. That piece will always be one of my favorites. I was on the piccolo part, and it really pushed my playing and got my piccolo chops in shape. For those of you who are familiar with the orchestral excerpts for piccolo book, it's in there, and it is... Scheherazade for piccolo is very hard, and it was such an honor to get to play it with such a fantastic ensemble, and playing that piece was super rewarding because of how difficult it was, and finally going out on stage and doing a pretty good job felt incredible. Question number 3 is, what is the most important thing to focus on when teaching beginners? I think the most important thing is to help them develop an embouchure. I start my new students on the head joint alone for the first week so they can practice getting a sound without adding the complications of fingers. And then after the first week, I teach them how to hold the flute and 1 or 2 notes. But we really focus on producing a sound and developing the strength in our embouchure muscles pretty early on. When did you start playing the flute? I started playing the flute the summer before 4th grade. I actually started out in private lessons before I could start band at school. I was on the swim team for my whole childhood, but I broke my foot that summer and couldn't swim. My parents decided I needed something to do and got me into flute lessons. It was the best thing they could have done for me. How do you decide what to do after graduation? That is a very tough question. I did my undergraduate degree in performance, and I always planned to get a master's degree. Now as I approach another graduation, I see how easy it is to feel like graduation is falling off a cliff. Where's the structure? Where's the path to follow? As Taylor Swift said, the bad news is you're on your own now. The good news is you're on your own now. There's no path to follow, which means you get to make your own path. Throughout your degree, whether that be a bachelor's or graduate degree, you will gravitate toward different things. At the end of my bachelor's degree, I was put into an incredible quintet that became a professional project called Shakadugat. There was no way for me to plan for that ahead of time. Something felt right, and I went with my gut. Now we've done a tour, a recording project, and are continuing to develop as a quintet. I think my best piece of advice for figuring out a path after graduation is to explore as many options as you can during your degree and then trust your gut. I know I have a place in the music world, and although it may take some time for me to find it, it's waiting for me. There's a place in music for everyone who wants one. It's waiting for you too. Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Lessons Unlocked podcast. Thank you to our performers of the day, Erica and Grace from North Carolina. And a final thank you to all music educators. Go listen to Carnival of the Animals by Camille Saison, and I'll have more for you next week. Bye.